This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
What We Spend is a new podcast that explores something we almost never talk about. Every week, you'll hear a different guest share everything they spend their money on. What We Spend is available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I think, you know, the biggest thing is always just competitive pitches. I think that throwing non-competitive pitches in the big leagues puts you in bad counts pretty quickly. Counts that you can probably pitch out of in AAA easier than you can in the big leagues. So, you know, this consistency of your pitches, not throwing, you know, kind of one good, one bad, but making sure that you're consistent and therefore, like I said, avoiding free pitches. You know, the difference between a 1-2 count and a 2-2 count is a pretty big difference. And that's probably the biggest thing he's been working on, and he's gaining consistency of the off-speed.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Good to hear from Jed Hoyer, the Cubs general manager, and we are delighted to welcome in Lance Brozdowski. He is the player development analyst for the Marquee Network, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Lance, good morning. How are you?
Hey, what's going on? Hope you guys are doing well.
We're doing great. It's great to talk to you because we're trying to figure out what happens now with Shota on the shelf, at least for looks like a few starts. If we're listening to everything said, what do you do? So you look at, they brought up a reliever with options, so they could send him back down. Is it going to be Cade Horton Day in New York, or do you think they'll stick with the other guy that was pitching pretty well in AAA, and that of course is the former White Sox player who struggled like hell last year, Chris Flexen, but has turned it around, erased the pitch, doing pretty well.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I mean, my initial impression was that it depends probably on the length of Shota being out. If you remember last year, Justin Steele had a hamstring injury that kept him out for about a month. Council said yesterday they thought it would be a little more than 2 weeks. So that's in a weird spot where it's like, okay, do you want Cade Horton to come up for basically two turns in the rotation and go back down? You know, it puts you in kind of a weird spot if he looks really good. I think if they knew it would be a month or more, then Cade would be up. But my if you made me guess right now, if you put me on the spot, I would say it is Cade Horton pitching in New York on Saturday. But I think it's kind of like a coin flip right now. Talking to people in the org, I mean, I think Cade Horton's ready. I think they think Cade Horton's ready. He added a sinker about three starts ago to throw versus right-handed hitters to kind of help him hover the inner third of the plate and then let everything work outer third, the fastball, the slider he throws. I thought that was very much like a finishing pitch of sorts. You know, it's not particularly hard for organizations to add sinkers. It's just kind of like an orientation change, and you throw like your four-seamer. So they added that, and I immediately went, okay, yeah, they think he's ready. You know, they could have given him this at any time they wanted, but this is very much a pitch that I think he's going to need versus major league hitters. So I think he's ready. I think he's – if you're putting me on a spot, he's probably one of the best five or six starters on the team. You know, I think – you know, Ben Brown's kind of had an up-and-down season. I thought he looked great in Milwaukee. Prior to that, he didn't look too great, and Council said that as well. I think that there's maybe a point at which this season you look and you go, yeah, Cade's the best fifth starter on this team. He's better than Wicks. He's better than Brown. He's better than some of these other guys. I just think the mix is deeper. I think the upside is perhaps slightly higher, which might be a really hot take, especially over a guy like Ben Brown. But, yeah, I'm torn on this one, man. I wish I had – it doesn't seem like anybody kind of knows, and we're kind of waiting on what they want to do. So I bet we'll find out, you know, maybe Wednesday after the game what they're doing, or maybe it's Thursday. But my guess right now is Cade, but I think it could go either way between Flexen and Cade.
Well, maybe you're in a position where you can help us understand what Cade Horton has done through six starts to put himself in a position to be considered for this promotion, because I think coming into this year – there was a lot of hope, but still curiosity over what kind of pitcher he would become. Still, because of the surgery and the injury that he has, you know, been dealing or had to deal with. But at this point of the season, what has he done to be this successful?
Yeah, it's a great point. So last year, I think the way to look at this is just through fastball velocity. Last year, he sat 94 on his fastball. You go back to 2023, he sat 96. That was the year where everybody pretty much had him as like a top four or five pitching prospect in all of baseball, not just the number one in the Cubs organization. Then he jumped to last year. Again, he didn't look that great. He goes down with a scap injury. And then you jump to this season. Now he's back to 96. So his stuff looks like it did in 2023 for the most part. The main thing that I understand is that earlier this spring, they kind of went through like a mechanical intervention with him, fixed his posture a little bit in terms of how he was stacking his torso relative to his pelvis, allowed him to pick up back the velo, slider picked back up the sweep he had. They kind of just like reset him to 2023. And that has been, from my understanding, one of the biggest keys in terms of allowing him to be more successful. So they were able to just revert him back to 2023. And now it's just really a matter of building back innings. You know, I think you'll hear a lot of the time people just talk about raw innings caps. I think the Cubs and a lot of other organizations have moved more towards like looking at workload, which is a bit more of like an ambiguous concept. They're probably never going to tell you exactly what is going into that workload number. A lot of teams, what it is basically looking at the intensity of throws, the individual torque on a pitcher's arm, how that compounds from bullpens to warm-up to actual in-game throws, et cetera. This is what you saw the White Sox do with Garrett Crochet last year, where he made him when he jumped like 140 innings or something like that.
Yeah.
Like that seems crazy, but they monitored it very closely. And, you know, they had Brian Bannister there. They have him still. And then he ends up going to the Red Sox, and he looks fantastic. So these teams that are a little sharper on the pitching side are getting a better understanding that it's not just he's capped at 100 innings. You know, we saw this with Steele, too. He jumped 120, 130 innings year over year. So I think the Cubs have it. If Cade is healthy the entire season, I think he could get to probably like 130-ish, 140-ish innings. Maybe that's very aggressive, and again, I'm guaranteeing health through the season on this. But that has some implication on what we're talking about here, where perhaps late in the year – he reverts back to being more of a reliever. And then you have to consider how the intensity of individual throws, now that he'd probably be up a tick or two in the bullpen, would impact that overall workload number. So I've always thought the easiest thing to do was to use him as a bridge now that showed it's down to get to the point at which you need to acquire another starter. Then you bring in another starter or two, and then all of a sudden you can revert him back to the pen, and you have a lot of options. You can puzzle a piece of pen together. I imagine they'll acquire a reliever. You have Cade, you know, maybe Ben Brown at that point becomes a reliever. We'll see. So you have options there, which I think is really what we're building towards. And the fact that they have guys like Ray and Boyd and these other guys pitching so well right now, I think gives you some buffer. But I'm playing the long game here. You know, I'm trying to think ahead. This team looks so good, but I think a lot of people are starting to project forward and go, okay, who do you acquire? You know, what's the role for Cade? Do you want Ben Brown as a five? Like, a lot of variables here that I think will have some impact down the stretch.
Yeah, you know, I think the kid is going to be a contributor. I just don't know that you need to begin that now. I don't like the idea that they are using him to fill in for Shota instead of trying to use him for what's best for him. You know what I mean? Like, is the best thing for him to be in New York, or is the best thing to be, you know, at home beating up the White Sox? And I'm not saying you have to make a decision only on the basis of what he can do, but it seems like that should be a consideration.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. It's a good point. I think that debut in New York would be pretty brutal, but you throw him into the fire, you see if he can survive. Like, I generally don't mind being aggressive with prospects, you know? Like, I think Cade is he's pitched in the College World Series. He's pitched on huge stages. This isn't like a high school kid that has never thrown in big games. So I'm confident that Cade, if you put him in that New York spot, what does he get? Alonzo Soto and there's a Nimmo, their leadoff hitter, off the top, you know? Like, that is, there you go, man. Like, let's see what you got. Like, I'm here for that. Like, I think to some extent you're right, but at the same time, like, how good this team has been allows you to have a little bit of freedom
around.
Scoring runs. Certain spots. So if Cade comes out of that start and you're like, man, he looks incredible, then you start to have conversations about, okay, how does Ben Brown look over his next two starts? You know, I mean, I get he pitched well in Milwaukee, but two starts ago we were wondering how long the starter experiment with him would last. You know, he's been, again, pretty volatile. The mix is really consolidated. I've always wondered whether he needs some kind of sinker or something along those lines to help just getting another pitch in zone to help the decay, so to speak, of some of the fastball slider or fastball curveball combination that he has in game. So that would be sink or swim. It'd be a really fun start on Saturday if they give it to Cade.
Talking with Lance Brozdowski from the Marquee Sports Network, talking about the Cubs pitching prospects and the Cubs pitching staff. And Chris Flexen is one of those reasons why they have some flexibility and some protection in that rotation and on that pitching staff. It's interesting, Lance, because you have talked about and reported that it's not so much the arm slot or the arm angle, but it's the fact that the Cubs reduce how much he uses his sweeper. What have the Cubs done specifically to get the best out of Chris Flexen?
Yeah, those are the two main points there. I initially didn't see too much of a difference with the arm slot. That's partially because we don't have direct arm angle data at AAA. We don't get it until a guy comes up to the majors. But after, again, following some people in the org, the big thing here is, like, a combination of how, like, his forearm is relating back to his torso. If you watch him, he's a very over-the-top guy. Like, I'm sure you saw this with the White Sox. You saw this with the Houston Mariner and such. Like, he's very vertical. He reminds me of, like, you know, Nick Pivetta, Justin Verlander, these guys that are, like, touching release heights that very few pitchers in baseball are touching because of how vertical and how much they almost, like, what you say, dump their torso at release. So the thing they did was kind of lower him back. Again, getting back to this point they mentioned with Cade, like, it's kind of like a postural thing. It's like, how efficient are you in your movement? And we think you're generally more efficient by lowering your arm a little bit, especially in Flexen's case, like pulling his forearm down a little bit. So that, for the most part, seems like it will push a little more velocity with him. I think he was 91 last year. For the most part, to me, he looks like he's 91 at AAA. So I'm wondering whether they think this change is something that takes maybe a little time to stick, and therefore, you know, he's maybe more 92, 93 at some point. But the sweeper usage is one that's interesting. My guess there is that by taking away the sweeper, or I guess by adding the sweeper, which I believe the White Sox did, what happens is you run into perhaps a little more vertical of a slot. So by them taking it away, what they're saying is like, okay, we don't want you trying to clip the front of that ball to get that horizontal movement on that pitch, even though it was pretty good with the White Sox. We prefer a little bit of a lower arm. We'll give you a second slider that's a little bit different than the sweeper, and we think it's maybe going to be equally as effective, but the ultimate result here is, hey, with this slightly lower arm, we think it'll be better. So I think they did a great job with him. They seem to have a bit of a couple really good outcomes with some of these older pitchers that have kicked around the league, and they've made subtle adjustments too. I think they've done a great job with Colin Ray. Who we'll see today against Verlander. So I'm optimistic around a lot of their pitch development, even though some of the things they do are kind of odd. Like, they throw a bunch of four-seam fastballs. They don't really throw their four-seam fastballs hard, but we are finally getting some good stuff in the pen, which they haven't had for 4 or 5 years. So the waves are kind of changing, and I think the Cubs are taking a pretty fascinating approach from just their mix standpoint, one that is, you know, zigging against the rest of the league, where pretty much everybody's backing off kinds of fastballs, and the Cubs are like, we're cool throwing them, like, try to hit them. And so far it's worked. I mean, I think they have top five starter ERA in baseball, so things are looking up.
You know, we had a fantastic conversation with Tommy Hotovy when the torpedo bat was like a big thing, and his response was, well, it's good to see the hitters try something, because it does seem like in pitching – they're inventing a new pitch every year, or they're converting a pitch, or they're changing something. It seems like that is where all of the advancements in baseball are coming, in the pitch lab.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, this is something that I feel like I talk about with a lot of people, but the idea is just, like, we have a really good way to measure a lot of the things that happen in pitching. And it's funny, because, like, a lot of this information is public. Like, I can tell you the individual break on a given pitch that Matt Boyd had in any start. I can do it live, because this stuff is literally live. You can go and second screen the experience by going on, like, Baseball's Avant. Like, that, to me, is almost, like, kind of insane, you know? If you think back to, what was it, like, 2015 is when this thing started to be aggregated. With hitting, we're still kind of in the dark with a lot. And it's so dependent on, I think, how guys get to point of contact. We're still kind of lost on you know, their pass into contact, what their vertical bat angle is, which is an element, a variable that I know a lot of teams look at internally on the hitting side. There's a lot of numbers there that I know teams look at internally that we just don't have access to on the public side. And I often argue a lot of the times that what helps progress the sport from an individual angle is when this stuff becomes public, because then you get a lot of people starting to dig into it. It becomes more common, and then you get a lot of those voices and people who are young pushing into organizations and coming in with different perspective, fresh perspective, and making change. We've seen this time and time again on the pitching side. I mean, think of how many people on the media side got scooped by organizations probably like 6 or 7 years ago because of all this pitching stuff and the insights they had. On the hitting side, like, we're still kind of waiting for some of these more underlying elements for us to get a good understanding of how these guys are moving and such. And I think they've done a good job, you know, some of the in-box stuff. What's your distance to the plate? How far back are you? Like, that's kind of a cool thing that we've gotten. We saw that with PCA in making some changes, and perhaps that being one of the reasons why he's slugging a lot more this year. But pitching's probably always going to be ahead of hitting. The initiative they have in the pitcher-hitter battle is just really, really important. And so much of hitting is dependent on location and pitch type that it's sometimes hard. Like, sometimes for 2 weeks, you just don't get a pitch in a spot that you can hit, and that you're 2 for 20, and it's like, oh, he's in a slump, and it's like, well, I don't know, he just hasn't been throwing anything in the area of the zone that he generally slugs, and then all of a sudden you run to a 2 week stretch where the guy goes, you know, hits 400 with 6 homers, and you're thinking that he changed something, and the guy's like, I didn't change anything, I just got pitches to hit. So it's one of those things where, like, hitting is very much an art, but I think we'll start to see more like objective approaches to it as time progresses, and I think that'll be good for the sport.
Switching from pitching to hitting, how do you explain why Pete Crow Armstrong has become so good at hitting for power on pitches outside the zone?
Yeah, no, this is a great point. This is something I've been kind of tracking because I find it fascinating. From what I understand, he said in some interviews too, like, he doesn't really know. I find that fascinating. You know, we saw year over year some of the changes he made. I just mentioned some of like the in-box stuff. Like, he's moved back in the box. I would imagine that allows him to have more time to read some of these breaking balls and such. And for the most part, a lot of hitters are back in the box. There are very few guys that are up front in the box. I think personally, one of the things that is slightly underrated with him, and I brought it up earlier in the year when his bat speed was a little bit hotter, it's kind of toned back, but he's still sitting like at about average now, whereas last year he was below average. I think one of the big things here is a lot of people just be like, oh, it's more about basketball, I don't really care about bat speed. But you break down bat speed on batted balls over the last couple of years, and you go from like this 70 to 71 mile per hour window up to 71, 72, where he now sits. And on average, those batted balls, you can add probably about like 40 to 60 points of slug, depending on the angle they're hit at. And you can add, you know, anywhere from like 10 to 20 feet just by jumping like 1 mile per hour on bat speed on those batted balls. And I think that's allowing him more time to see some of these pitches deep in the zone and actually do damage on them. Whereas if you take these pitches to last year and he's making contact with them, I don't think a lot of them are barrels. And then what you run into is, like, probably they're saying, hey, tone it down or shut it down below the zone because, like, that's not productive contact. Where he's in a very unique spot right now where he's able to cover vertically down, even if there's some variance there. And if he whiffs in those pitches, I think the net of him being able to actually barrel some of those balls below the zone is an overall positive for the organization and for him specifically. Obviously, we've seen that. And to have that deep in the lineup, too, is really exceptional, I think. Like, now you have Dansby starting to lock back in, hitting ace. I imagine he'll jump back up at some point. But Pete in that, like, 6-7 spot, it's like the bottom of the lineup's pretty good. And I generally, a lot of the I've always joked that, like, when you're talking about the bottom of the lineup, the problem is that the top of the lineup probably isn't that good. You know, this is what I feel like we ran into this sometime in the past with the Cubs, where it's like, man, look at the 6 through 8 hitters. And it's like, great, we're talking about them because the 1 through 4 is not particularly great, you know, from an overall production standpoint. But this year, the reason the Cubs offense is top 3 in baseball in like pretty much every metric is because of all this production top down. So this is like the one exception to that rule that I have, where it's like, we're talking about the bottom of the lineup, it's probably because the top 4 aren't great. But with the Cubs, everybody seems to be hitting, and it's exceptional.
Great stuff, Lance. Thank you, buddy. Great to catch up with you.
Thanks, Lance.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Take care.
That's Lance Brodstowski. He does a great job. I mean, that is. I'm trying to figure out how to get the torso connected.
You're doing your torso exercises over there.
Yeah.
Figuring out the mechanics and the biomechanics of pitching. He has so much information.
Oh, my God.
And he processes it at a real quick rate, but he's got a grasp on why the Cubs are pitching well, why they're hitting well, and he really does a nice job for Marquee.
Yeah, he does, no doubt about it. Hey, we want to let you know, keep listening for your chance to win an opportunity to see our show live Friday, May 16th at the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. You can be part of a studio audience as we get set for the start of the Crosstown Series with special guests and plenty of Cubs and Sox chatter. Plus, it's a popcorn production. The popcorn will be provided by Nuts on Clark. There's still some here.
There's still some here.
They came in yesterday.
Yesterday was Snack Fest.
With an embarrassment of riches.
It was. But
incredible.
And it was definitely tasty.
No doubt.
It was delicious.
It was unbelievable.
And it will be on display Friday.
And you are getting the bacon grease. You're going to be making some popcorn
I'll be popping some popcorn, but you also can enjoy stuff from Nuts on Clark because there will be plenty of popcorn.
That's Friday, May 16th, and it's all brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois through it all.
So right now. Let's do it right now.
Let's do it now. All
312-540-0670. Let's do it right now. And you can be the sixth caller. You can win a couple tickets to come and join us. Eat all of the popcorn.
David's guy, Benny the Bull, would be pouring popcorn. No.
If he wants to come, he can come. I'm past that.
No.
Grody tried to tell the story yesterday. I'm past it.
The two of you, there's going to be a stare down, if nothing else.
It was a good decade. I got to let it go. I got to let it go, Molly. I got to let it go.
Hey, and keep listening. We're going to give you a chance to win some Cubs versus Marlins tickets at Wrigley Field. That's for next Monday, May 12th, and it's provided by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
The Chicago Blackhawks is at pick number 3. The San Jose Sharks fall to pick number 2. And the New York Islanders, the first overall pick in the 2025 NHL Draft.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Still getting over whatever that was.
What was it?
That was the NHL Draft. And again.
You know what it was?
A waste of time?
Well, it wasn't a waste of time because we found out finally where the Hawks will draft.
Okay.
Third.
Yeah, but.
It was overthinking it.
It was way over the top.
It was overdoing it.
It was too inside lottery.
It was ridiculous because they were showing us how the sausage is made.
It had nothing to do with hockey. It wasn't about inside hockey. It was inside lottery.
Inside lottery.
I was sitting there thinking, like, what? How do you fix this?
We're going to put the balls into the machine now.
Oh my God!
And the number's going to come out. Nobody's going to know exactly what the codes are.
But the numbers didn't mean anything.
They didn't mean anything to anybody watching.
It was like, and then they shove a number up next to a name, and you kind of like, oh, they've got six. It's like watching a card game. They've got six outs. Oh, he's got three outs. He's now.
It was very confusing. I don't want to speak for everybody in the room, but I was at the United Center in the FanDuel Lounge.
How many people were there?
There were probably 75, maybe 75-ish people.
Did they
do
any kind of? Did they do a presentation after it was determined?
To be honest, I left before it was over because
you knew when they were picking.
I sensed the room, and I was like, "This is." They didn't. CHSN had a nice presence. Pat Boyle was there, and he was.
It was so confusing.
He was definitely watching it with me, and we were like, "This is a hard thing to watch from a television standpoint because it wasn't very clear what was going on."
The ESPN guy comes out, and his whole purpose is to just be enthusiastic. He's shot out of a cannon.
He's just a carnival barker.
He's so happy. That's exactly what it
was. That's
all it was. That's what it was.
Hey, come right up. See the bearded lady.
That's what it felt like.
Here you can throw. Here's a dunk tank. Here's a couple baseballs. It was crazy. And the bottom line was that all they needed to do was do that stuff.
I'm a human being.
Do that stuff behind closed doors. Off stage, we trust you, NHL. Have it verified by whatever firm you need to have it verified by. And then, you know what? Do what the NBA does. Open an envelope.
That's it.
Show us who's picking fourth. Show us who's picking third. Show us who's picking second and who won the lottery.
That's it.
Bingo.
And then there'd be like some suspense and something. And you know, the other thing is you got people sitting there like Kyle Davidson who probably have thoughts on what they didn't interview anyone.
No, they don't.
They didn't talk to anyone.
I know.
They didn't even introduce who the people
they
were.
They did not. Who were those guys?
It was like there was some like half-arsed version of Hollywood Squares going on.
Yeah.
Like, what? What is that?
It was chaotic. And so
they even, before it started, they brought in the top three draft picks.
I love those interviews. Yeah.
What was that?
That was funny because good luck, guys. Good luck, guys.
That was
good luck, boys.
It was, I mean, it was so strange. And the NBA is next week. And I got
in Chicago,
you,
I believe.
Yes, it is.
It's in Chicago. And, not in Secaucus, New Jersey any longer.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? Don't you always think about Secaucus?
I do. Well, that's the only reason I know what Secaucus is and how to spell it. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you see it every year for years, every May. And so now it's in next week, you'll see how it's supposed to be done.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. And they're not going to concern themselves with trying to give you the inside how lottery picks are made and how it was confounding to me. It did not make an ounce of sense. I don't think they thought it through at all.
I don't either. So it was like they were doing a dry run on national television live.
It was just awful.
So let's tell the Hawks fans what they do need to know. This is the bottom line. The Hawks are picking third.
There you go.
And they likely are going to be picking from three players, all right?
Yes.
Michael Mesa, who is a centerman. That is a very talented guy.
I thought he was going second.
He could go second, but we don't know for sure. I'm giving you three names.
He was locked.
James Hagans, who's from Boston College.
That's the guy that they're probably going to end up
freshman
getting.
Didn't have a great freshman season, but he still is a very talented prospect who is likely to go third, only because I say that he's probably the third highest rated prospect.
Yes.
Because Matthew Schaefer, the defenseman, is expected to go number one overall.
Yeah, he's a lock to go number one, and he's the only defenseman of great value. The drop-off in that. So
the third prospect would be Porter Martone, I believe is the way you pronounce his last name.
That's the kid from he's out of the country, right?
Yeah, and I think that Porter Martone is somebody that would be the third name that comes up when you're looking at the top prospects. Yeah, third name of offensive forwards that comes up, and I think that's possible. But you know, Kyle Davidson has plenty of time to do the scouting.
Right,
Hawks are going to get a good player. Maybe one they rely on as early as next year. We'll wait and see.
Yes.
They've got a lot of young talent in the pipeline. They've got a lot of good players along that are young. Let's hope that a year from now, we're not critiquing the NHL lottery because we're watching it so closely. Let's hope a year from now, we're talking about a Blackhawks team that has made a step. And I don't think we'll be talking about a Blackhawks team in a playoff series, but that's probably 2 years away.
You know, I really enjoyed our conversation yesterday just talking about Bedard and what he needs to do and how he needs to play and how he needs to change. I'm more interested in that right now than the lottery.
Yeah, I think that's a good point because Frank Cervelli put it very well. Connor Bedard in his third season, already he's entering his third season. This offseason has to work on being less deferential, more aggressive, and approaching the year like a guy who has a top five shot in the NHL. And that was Frank Saravalli, who's one of the best insiders going, working for the Chicago Sports Network, also for the Daily Faceoff, which he's leaving at the end of the year, by the way.
Oh, really?
He did say that. Yeah, he's going to be free agent July 1st. That'll be a good find for somebody. But nonetheless, Bedard has got to approach next season like he is the scorer that he can be.
Yeah, they're going to need him to, you know, we don't talk about this enough with goal scorers, generally speaking. You have to be selfish.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a level of like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do you. The one thing that you don't want is to someone who believes they have to share the puck or set somebody up.
Watch these playoffs.
You know,
watch the playoffs.
Score the damn goal.
Yeah, just watch these guys attacking the net.
It's incredible.
That game last night, and I know I talk about hockey every day, but it is a playoff.
Yep.
The Maple Leafs and the Panthers last night was
a
good game. Two great teams, and they are potentially great teams. You could look at either one of those teams and say they're going to win the cup and not be wrong because of what you saw in any given shift. These are two quality teams, both ends of the ice. Good goaltending, and that was a fantastic game. And the NHL playoffs deliver on a nightly basis.
I got to tell you, the playoffs deliver because the NBA was great last
night.
You know, you had two upsets, And I'm not like, I don't know why, but I'm more of a Celtics guy than I am a Knicks guy. I didn't really enjoy watching the Knicks.
You didn't like Brunson?
No, I love Brunson.
But then you guys must love the Knicks.
Well,
love the Knicks.
I love Brunson and I love Tibbs.
Yeah.
But I have never liked the Knicks. It's weird. And I've always thought Boston was okay, but I like that team. And then they lose to the Knicks, who I like individuals on the group, but I don't like him, them. And then the other game was unbelievable. That was, you know, the Joker is still, you know, he's still this entity.
OKC.
They won
42 and 22.
Game. They were both road upsets.
42 and 22.
And they came back to win that game 42 and 22. What the hell is that?
I guess we can forget the pipe dream of him leaving Denver in shambles and the chaos that ensues after they get ousted in the first round.
That's right.
So forget about Giannis, Casey Johnson. Although yesterday, did you see KC came around slightly on the Charter podcast?
He was on the
Bulls podcast.
Let's get that done. Let's make
Giannis.
Deal.
The more I think about it, he can't see it happening. But in the NBA, he never says never.
Things happen.
It's not like
now,
that happened.
Matas. You can't trade him because he's now your lucky charm.
He's the lottery lucky charm.
He's going to be the guy on camera, you know, trying to get another player.
Back to your point about the NBA playoffs. How surprised were you, though, that OKC didn't have a better answer for the Nuggets? They were the rested team. They were the ready team. They were the home team. You know, they're the best team in the NBA.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is probably the MVP of the league this year. And it should be Joker.
Yeah.
It should permanently be Joker. Because that's what he showed you yesterday.
Permanently?
I am the permanent MVP. As long as I share the ball and do the things that I can do, you have to vote me MVP.
You know, I have to say that's not an outrageous thing based on how he produces.
It was a ridiculous thing yesterday.
It was so on brand for the Nuggets, who by the way, they fired their coach, and they're doing this.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Mike Malone got shown the door.
He did.
Then they fired the GM, too. How are they doing this? You know why? Because Joker's the MVP.
Well, there's the man.
There it is. That's a common thing. I'm pulling for the Knicks, though. I'm pulling for the Knicks over Celtics. I don't think it's realistic.
I don't know why I'm a Boston guy. Maybe because your guy took over the team, and I really like him.
Brad Stevens?
Yes, my guy.
That's my guy.
Like, secretly, I like Hoosier.
He's an Indiana boy.
Speaking of Indiana boys, I am pulling for the Pacers to upset the Cavs.
Well, I'm hoping that happens. Game one.
That's
crazy.
Brandon, is that just a fluke? Was that a fluke?
That seems
I don't think that's a fluke. I actually think that the Pacers are probably a worse matchup for them, for Cleveland overall, than the Bucks Bucks would advance.
Talking about bad matchups, how about tonight? You're going to see the Golden State Warriors with one of the worst matchups they could possibly have. Just think about Golden State and think about how vertical their opponent
is.
It's just a
size
problem.
I hope they send T-Wolves home.
Also, think about this, too. Anthony Edwards was the number one pick. Remember, Golden State had the number two pick, and Steve Kerr told him
during a workout,
if we had the number one pick, we probably would not draft you. You don't think he probably forgot about that?
No, he did not forget about that.
And there's video of him, too, saying that he wants to play the Warriors because they talk so much, and he wants to go against Draymond.
He's talking about somebody talking so much. He's still talking from the other night.
He's still walking around.
He's still doing
LA.
A victory lap. This guy does more victory laps than Usain Bolt.
You know what's so funny? As I think everybody wanted the Warriors and the Lakers and the last go round and hurrah, hurrah, look who's still playing. And I think that it's going to be the Wolves all the way with both those. You know,
I don't know. I hope not. I hope not. I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet.
You are obsessed with Jimmy. And you want him.
I'm pulling for Jimmy Butler. Yes. Always been my favorite NBA guy. I'm pulling for Steph Curry. I like Steve Kerr.
Of course.
I don't even mind Draymond.
Did you see Steph's son started crying after game six when they lost game six? He couldn't console the kid. The kid's crying his eyes out. And
they knew what they were doing.
That's when I knew they won game seven. I was like, okay, Curry's going to take care of this.
Oh, yeah. You're so right.
Dad takes care of business. Yeah. All right, right now, be the sixth caller to the Scores Contest line. We got another great giveaway We're just giving away everything. We're just givers. Pair tickets to see the Cubs and the Marlins next Monday night, May 12th, Wrigley Field, provided by Bosch Power Tools. The more you Bosch, the more you feel like a Bosch. 312-540-0670.
Don't you feel like a Bosch?
Yes, I definitely feel like a Bosch.
I feel like a Harry Bosch.
I feel like tonight's going to be a fun night at Wrigley Field. Justin Verlander, Colin Ray, 640, pregame right here on the Score, 605. That's going to be fantastic.
Colin Ray cutting another swat through whomever.
Colin Ray just upstaging the celebrity pitcher on the opposite mound.
Go. That's it. That's it.
And ready to roll.
And the Sox, they've got, I believe, Sean Burke.
Yeah, Sean Burke is against the 640 as well in Kansas City against the Royals. Sean Burke is a chance. He had a pretty good start last time out, right?
Yeah, he's doing all right.
He's doing okay.
He's not Shane Smith, but he's doing okay.
Seth Lugo opposes Sean Burke for the Royals against the White Sox.
Yeah, well, Bobby Witt Jr. opposes. That's the problem. That's the problem. Play. Just put the guy, put him out of commission because you can't put him on base.
Hard slide.
You can't walk.
Hard slide.
I don't know how you take it. That guy's a really good player. All right, we've got, I believe, Dan Weider in today. So we get a chance to talk to Dan and Leila Rahimi, and we'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the Score.